The days may be numbered for one of the nation's most prominent conservative magazines, The Weekly Standard.
Its owner, Clarity Media, recently announced that a sister publication, The Washington Examiner, would be rolling out a new weekly conservative magazine with national distribution. In a statement, the company said it's, quote, exploring a number of possibilities, end quote, for The Standard's future. In addition, Politico is reporting that an all-hands meeting is scheduled for tomorrow. They quoted an unnamed Weekly Standard writer as saying the assumption is that, quote, something bad is going to happen on Friday.
The Weekly Standard came on the scene in 1995 and has generally supported Republicans, but it's been opposed to President Trump, putting it at odds with many of its readers.
Charlie Sykes is a contributing editor to The Weekly Standard, author of How the Right Lost Its Mind, and a former longtime talk radio host in Milwaukee. Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
Well, you've been involved with The Weekly Standard. Now, what was your reaction when you started hearing this latest news about The Weekly Standard?
Well, it's highly unfortunate because The Weekly Standard has been, I think, one of the most important and interesting and innovative voices among conservatives. You know, not just in its skepticism and opposition to President Trump, but really as a thoughtful outlet for conservative writers on culture, on a lot of the issues of the day. So I think it would be a significant loss if, in fact, it disappears.
Now, we've seen, according to Politico, The Weekly Standard circulation has gone down over the last couple of years, especially since President Trump has taken office. Now, I know weekly political magazines, it's not what you do to make tons of money, right? There's a lot of challenges for the industry as a whole. But did the arrival of President Trump on the scene add extra difficulties to The Weekly Standard?
Yeah, certainly. There's no question about it. I mean, you've seen this with the shift on the right. As Republicans and conservatives have rallied around Donald Trump, which, of course, you know, creates a problem for conservatives who want to say, you know, hey, let's hold off on the cult of personality here. I've argued that it's very difficult to find a successful business model to be an anti-Trump conservative. Now, so yes, there's no question that has created headwinds. But having said that, the Weekly Standard was still, you know, by the standards of weekly political magazines, still doing quite well. What I think is about to happen is really not a natural death as opposed to a choice by the ownership.
Right. I know you can't read the ownership's minds there, but do you think that this potential end to the Weekly Standard is because of the magazine's opposition to President Trump?
Well, I certainly don't want to exaggerate my insight into all the things that are going on behind the scenes. You know, I'm not in Washington. I'm still in Milwaukee. So I think there's probably a lot of issues that are going on, but there's no question about it that that is a significant factor in what's going on, that you have two publications side by side, the Washington Examiner and the Weekly Standard. The Washington Examiner has been, shall we say, much more Trump-friendly and open to Trumpian ideas, and including some folks on the right that would you know, not ever be published in the Weekly Standard. So what the ownership has decided to do is shift tremendous resources into the Washington Examiner, turn that into a magazine, at the same time that they are very, very likely to kill off the Weekly Standard. So you have the death of one of the more independent Trump skeptical publications and a substantial expansion of a publication that has been much, much friendlier to Donald Trump.
Talking to Charlie Sykes, contributing editor to the Weekly Standard, longtime radio host in Milwaukee, talking about what looks like the likely end of the Weekly Standard. And Charlie, you mentioned this isn't the only thing it's ever done, but the Weekly Standard has been notable for its voice as a conservative but non-necessarily Trump-supporting outlet. Why is it important for you and others to have this form, this version of conservatism kept alive and popularized?
Well, because I don't think that Donald Trump represents all of conservatives. I mean, clearly right now, most conservatives have decided to make their peace with him, have decided to modify their standards in order to support Donald Trump. But there's another tradition there, and I think it's a tradition that we saw during the funeral for George H.W. Bush, when we began to think about what John McCain represented in American politics. So it's important always, I think, to have a forum for ideas that are not completely tribal. And one of the things that Steve Hayes, who's the editor-in-chief, and I have talked about, I host their daily podcast, is we wanted to create a voice that was smart, non-tribal and conservative. But the hard part is the non-tribal, because so much of our politics is tribal. And every once in a while, I think it's important to, you know, go back and say, look, we don't necessarily have to buy this untruth. We don't have to buy these extreme comments. Let's be honest about the nature of this administration. Some of the strongest articles that were written in the Weekly Standard came after the president's comments after Charlottesville, where he referred to, after the neo-Nazi march in Charlottesville, referred to, you know, good people on both sides. And the Weekly Standard was one of the few and most eloquent conservative voices saying, no, that is not true. That's not where we stand. That's not who we are.
A lot of conservatives and Republicans might say, okay, a lot of that stuff, the president's tweets, a lot of things he says, set that aside. We're getting a lot of traditional conservative Republican agenda items checked off. Judges to the Supreme Court that probably a President Rubio or President Cruz would have been happy to appoint. Lower court judges mostly along the same lines. A big tax cut, regulatory changes. The outcome, is it really that much different than another conservative Republican president might have been?
No, and you've made the case well, and that, of course, is one of the debates that's going on in the conservative movement. And there are writers and articles that have been written in the Weekly Standard that have made roughly those points. But then there's also the question, what is the price tag for all of that? What are we willing to accept? What are we willing to give up? How much of the president's character and his judgment are we willing to excuse in order to get that? And I've compared this to the Faustian bargain, where in a Faustian bargain, you get what you want. You get a lot of good things, only to find out that the price, in this case, your soul, is much greater than you had perhaps anticipated. And I think that the Republican Party is really struggling through that Faustian bargain with Donald Trump. And with every day, they're finding out that the price goes up.
Talk about that price a little more. What part of the conservative soul do you see people losing?
Well, I think in part of it, it's the way in which they've become a prisoner to Donald Trump's mendacity, to his lies. You know, the president has created this this swamp of corruption and deceit around his presidency. And there are a lot of Republicans that feel that, well, as long as we get tax cuts, we're not going to speak out against that. We're going to look the other way as the president lashes out, demeans his opponents, mocks the disabled and women, and all of those things. And, of course, the Republican Party is paying a price for that at the polls. But it continually shifts the window of what they are willing to accept. Look, I'll be honest with you. I was one of those that spent 20 years trying to say that a lot of the criticism of the right, you know, you guys are racist and sexist and, you know, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, xenophobic. And I, you know, thought, no, there's a different tradition. There's, you know, the Jack Kemps of the world, the Paul Ryans of the world. But what's happening is now that Donald Trump comes up and he's sort of a caricature of all of those things. And you're seeing conservatives basically either embracing it or being willing to accept it. And I think this is just a long-term political disaster, but I think also it's a moral test that they're failed.
Now, you saw yourself as a radio host. You've talked about how a lot of your listeners bought into what Donald Trump was selling as a candidate. What does that mean? Does that mean that Donald Trump changed the conservatives who are already there, or that the things he represented were there and maybe not recognized as much, even by people within the party?
Well, that's a fascinating question. And you'll recall that in Wisconsin, Wisconsin conservatives were very Trump skeptical, very, very opposed to him through the middle of 2016. This was the one state where he hit a massive speed bump, lost the Wisconsin presidential primary by double digits. But as the year went on, you saw the tribalization of American politics kick in and people deciding, okay, even though we might have thought he was completely unfit for this office and were repelled by some of the things that he said, we're going to go along with him because no matter how awful he is, Hillary Clinton must be worse, and it's a binary choice. So one of the things that I've asked is what was out there? What was the pre-existing condition that enabled people to look at Donald Trump and say, yeah, that's okay, we're willing to accept that? And I think there's a lot of introspection and debate going on about what was really happening on the right that perhaps we did not fully understand, that we perhaps were naive or blinded ourselves to. that it was willing to accept this. And certainly, you know, race has been one of the hot point buttons that that we have debated internally. The question, I don't know whether, I don't know what proportion of conservatives might be, you know, have racial bias, but what we're seeing is the willingness of so many to at least find it acceptable or to be indifferent to the playing of the race card, which is really disturbing to many of us. And a lot of us have to look back and go, did we contribute to this, or were we willfully blind to a lot of this that was happening?
We're talking about the future of the Weekly Standard and what its possible end could mean for conservative media and politics. Charlie Sykes is with us, contributing editor to the Weekly Standard, author of How the Right Lost Its Mind, and a longtime talk radio host in Milwaukee.
Let's hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the potential downfall of the Weekly Standard? Do you read the Standard, or are you turned off by its opposition to President Trump? Do you feel like there's no room for the Never Trump voice on the right? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time, WPR.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. We're talking about the Weekly Standard's uncertain future with Charlie Sykes. He's a contributing editor to that magazine. He's worried that there may not be room in the conservative media landscape for conservatives who don't back Donald Trump. He's also the author of How the Right Lost Its Mind and a longtime radio host in Milwaukee.
You can join us at 800-642-1234. Are you or have you been a fan of the Weekly Standard, or is it too anti-Trump for your taste? What do you think its loss would mean for conservative media? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time, WPR.
And Charlie, you've mentioned political tribalism some. Talk about what you mean by that. Is it this sense that a thing is wrong only if the other side does it? If our people do it, we can kind of overlook that.
Well, that's exactly right. And we're seeing that played out, and we'll see it played out next year, where both sides have adopted this the moral relativism of picking and choosing what their standards are. But also, you know, I think one of the mistakes that a lot of us made in politics, and I've talked about this this a lot, has been to think that politics was primarily about ideas or about policies or even about accomplishments, when in fact this new tribal politics is more like about identity. It's about attitude. It's about our side winning, the other side losing. And if that means absolutely flip-flopping on the, you know, positions, like, for example, whether personal character and honesty matters, then people are completely willing to do that.
Let's bring on a caller now. Dick is with us in Madison. Hi.
Yeah, I find this kind of fascinating. I told your screener I basically disagreed with most of what was in it. I'll come right out front and say that. But in the last 2 years, I've really read it, and what he was saying earlier, I agree with. They were the only people, you know, from the right that were challenging this person. And, you know, and the other thing is there's other stuff in the magazine that's interesting. You know, little side notes, sports stuff, periodically. And it's kind of fascinating that something, you're talking about something even harder right, is going to stand up. How long will that last, you know?
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Charlie, I think a lot of people, maybe from the center, left, Democrats, whatever you want to call it, gain a newfound admiration for the Weekly Standard in the last couple of years.
I think that that's true. And it is, I'll be honest, I'm not biased. I have a conflict of interest, but it's an outstanding publication with great writers. Stephen Hayes and Bill Kristol assembled really an all-star cast of columnists, of people who wrote personality profiles. And so, yes, it has been an important voice. But also, what really has impressed me is the moral courage of the editors and the writers who've continued to go against the tide. It is not easy for conservatives to be anti-Trump these days. And I don't think you can underestimate the pressure on people in the conservative media to sort of, you know, bow the knee, to go along. And they have not done that. They've refused to do that. And I have, you know, I'm tremendously proud of them and proud to be associated with them. And I think they deserve a lot of credit.
Thanks a lot for that call. Going out to Jeff with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'll try to keep it short. I'm first of all shocked that Wisconsin Public Radio is even bringing up this topic, but I'm glad that you are, and I'm grateful. So I went to Trump's
rally when he was in Superior. He flew into the airport in Duluth, and we had a rally of about 5,000 people in Superior in April of 2016. And that really coalesced a lot of people in this area for his campaign. So what it did, it highlighted, at least in this part of northern Wisconsin, that there was a split in the Republican Party. You had Walker Republicans, and you had Trump Republicans. Now, when it came to the winning, the Wisconsin primary, Cruz won the primary, but there were still a lot of Trump supporters, and that's why I think Trump won Wisconsin. The reason I'm bringing this up is I declared my candidacy for the assembly in November of 2016, but I didn't get any help from the Republican Party because I've supported Trump. And there were a lot of Walker Republicans, and they're loyal to Walker and all that, blah, blah, blah. But Walker lost, you know, and Trump won. So in my opinion, the whole party loyalty thing speaks to how to be effective as leaders and how to be, effective in terms of government once you actually gain power. So,
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. I want to bring Charlie in on this interesting perspective there, Charlie.
Well, yeah, I mean, but understand that Donald Trump won because the Republican establishment in Wisconsin rallied around him. Despite all of their qualms, Scott Walker, who ran for president himself, supported Donald Trump. Reince Priebus, who was at that time the chairman of the Republican National Committee, made winning Wisconsin a priority there. But I do think this is the power of party loyalty. But that doesn't mean that you ought not to have strong voices saying, here's an alternative vision. Because I think long-term, Trumpism is going, we don't know whether it's going to end in tragedy or farce, but I personally think it's going to end very, very badly. And a lot of Republicans, at the end of this period, the day after Donald Trump leaves, are going to try to, say to, women and minorities and young people, that wasn't us. We weren't really part of that, but they were. And right now they are owning, that agenda, that style, and the moral, character that he's presenting. So I think it's crucial from the conservative point of view to have an alternative voice, not to mention that I think it's healthy in this society to have an articulate, intelligent, center-right voice that in fact can perhaps continue this discussion across some of these tribal divides. And I think that up until today, the Weekly Standard was able to do that. I mean, whatever's going to happen, it will happen tomorrow. So I said today, but today feels like it's one of the final days.
Jeff, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Charlie Sykes about the likely end of the Weekly Standard and the place of so-called never Trump conservatives in the conservative political and media landscape. And Charlie, I do want to switch gears. You've written about something a little closer to home here in Wisconsin, the extraordinary session of the legislature, the pieces of legislation that Governor Walker is likely to sign, it looks like, in the next 6 days. Your thoughts on the changes made there?
Well, I wrote a piece not for the Weekly Standard, but for the Atlantic last week. So, it's essentially urging Scott Walker not to sign all of that because, even though some of the rhetoric has been over the top about the end of democracy, the death of democracy, the reality is that what the legislature did in this last minute lame duck session was petty, it was vindictive, and it's likely to backfire on Republicans. And I think it will tarnish Scott Walker's legacy. And he's been tweeting since then. He's been on sort of a tweet storm saying, here's my legacy, here's my legacy, here's what I've accomplished. And my point would be then make sure that you don't step on that, that you don't basically change the subject from that to this last minute. There's no other way to feel than that it is vindictive, stripping the power from the man who beat you for governor and from the incoming attorney general. It looks like sour grapes because it is sour grapes. The other point I tried to make in that Atlantic article was that ultimately you don't get much for it. This is not the end of the world. Some of the claims about it are exaggerated, but this is another reason for Walker not to sign it, that it really doesn't make that much of a difference. So you are creating this national firestorm. You are endangering your legacy. You're really hurting yourself and the image of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. For what? For really, essentially, more or less minor things, with the exception of
the attack on early voting, which I think is also going to end up probably being thrown out by a federal court.
In our last minute, Charlie, can we overcome political tribalism here in Wisconsin? Do you see Republican lawmakers and an incoming Democratic governor actually getting stuff done?
Well, they're going to have to get some stuff done. They're going to have to figure out a way to do that. How that's going to happen is hard to imagine. Similar in Washington, D.C., when you have divided government, sooner or later you're going to have to compromise. And every time you take a step like this, you make it that much more difficult. I think one of the things in our tribal politics that we've seen is that compromise has become a dirty word, and somehow we need to overcome that.
And very briefly, do you see Scott Walker making another chapter in his political life? Will we have Scott Walker to kick around again, to quote Richard Nixon?
There's always another chapter for Scott Walker. Look, he's 51 years old. In theory, he could be around for, you know, politically active for another 30 years. I don't think he's leaving the state anytime soon. So, yes, I think you will have Scott Walker to kick around more.
Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Charlie Sykes is a contributing editor to the Weekly Standard, author of the book How the Right Lost Its Mind, and a former longtime talk radio host in Milwaukee. We've been talking with him about a variety of things, starting with the possible end of the conservative weekly, the Weekly Standard, and what that means about the place of conservatives skeptical about Donald Trump, whether they have a place in conservative politics and the media landscape.